we know just a few months ago, a person was arrested for impersonating a police officer. So here's what happens. They're serving a misdemeanor warrant for disturbing the peace. They come to the door. He comes to the door. He says, as the judge said, I was always taught, don't let a stranger in your house. He says, where's your warrant? Doesn't show a badge. Bursts in. She spends the time saying, where's your warrant? Who are you?
Excuse me, do they have a warrant on them?
I don't know. Maybe they left it in the car. What we do know is they never showed it. And certainly, as a matter of law, at this point, on a summary judgment, you must assume that they never showed it. Now, the issue becomes, was that legal to get into the house and so on, then the excessive force claim. We have to look at what the cases say. And, you know, the government wants a rule that says, and while on one level this is just a minor case, right? Rotator cuff surgery, boom, boom, boom. We see those all the time. They want you to pronounce a rule that says everyone in Nebraska, when there's a knock on the door and they say, I'm law enforcement, you must allow them in. No badge, plain clothes, no warrant. You must display the indicia. Now, perhaps my brief was awkward in bringing up the no-knock statute, but the point of the no-knock is even the bad guys, not grandma, but the bad guys, on a no-knock, you have to announce who you are. You have to show some type of indicia. The government uses a brief. In their brief, they cite to a case supporting their position where you look out and they got the SWAT team with police, you know, those huge, those shields that say police.
Is that the Moreno case?
I believe so. And the other thing, though, is, so let's go. It's true. If you have one, and nobody has a case, and I was thinking about this morning, perhaps the reason neither side has a case is everybody shows the warrant. And when you get to the excessive force claim, that's why it's so important. She goes down to the basement, and she is hollering, and because she's hollering, she's cuffed. And she says before she's cuffed, I got shoulder surgery. She's so tiny that she slips her hand out of the cuff. And she's thrown down to the ground again. What was her crime? There was no crime. In fact, the state statute says if you're going to be interfering with an official act, one of your defenses is you got to know that it's a police officer. And where the district court said, and the best evidence that we know that she was a law-abiding citizen was, as soon as Lincoln police come, as soon as LPD shows up in uniform, she cooperates completely, says, yes, I was not compliant.
What would you think would be the question of fact in this case that would prevent a judgment as a matter of law?
Oh, clearly the issue as to the reasonableness of the entry.
Is that a material? I'm sorry. I'll let you finish and then I'll ask my question.
Okay. The reasonableness, and secondly, the use of force, which is almost always a jury fact. And especially when you look at the Reds case that came out of Omaha, was affirmed in 2004, the Eighth Circuit talked about is there a possibility of an alternative action is an appropriate factor determining whether force is excessive. Let's see. How difficult would it be to find an alternative action? Show her your warrant. Show her your badge. Either one of those. We wouldn't be here today. It wouldn't have happened.
Is it your position that the reasonableness of the officer depends upon his failure or whatever to show his badge or warrant?
And under these circumstances, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. You have to look at the severity of the crime at issue. They're serving a warrant on her grandson for disturbing the peace, a misdemeanor. The second thing is the immediate threat to the safety of the officers or others. What's her threat? She's yelling, show me a warrant.
I think it was inferred that the grandson had prior weapons charges, and the trial court concluded that that created an exigency, a circumstance where they had to act quickly because he might arm himself.
Sure. not the state.
What?
If they could convince a jury of that, that's fine. Otherwise, no. We have to look not to the grandson. We have to look. Oh, somebody comes to your house. I mean, is this what we're going to say now that at the high school graduations? By the way, you're about to become a citizen. If a stranger knocks on your door, be sure to let them in if they say they're police officers. The entire time, he never struck the officer. All she ever said is, do you have a warrant? Show me your warrant. They never showed a badge. I mean, it's...
Didn't she testify that the officer said he didn't have the warrant, but he knew there was one?
Yeah. Judge, gotta have a warrant. Now, if I'm a stranger doing a home invasion, that's a pretty good scam, right? That's like the scam where they call up in Omaha and Lincoln now because you're missing jury duty, and they want money.
Before you sit down,
yep.
Is the issue of qualified immunity before us? And if it is, given that your opponent may want to talk about it, what do you have to say about that issue?
I don't think it's before you. I just as judge didn't rule on it. They did not cross appeal on it. But assuming you take it up, this doesn't fit qualified immunity. Everybody knows can't what this officer did is not shielded because the law is clear on these two issues of when you enter a home and the type of force that you use. And here's a question of fact for the jury to determine under all these circumstances, a 77-year-old woman can simply say, where's your warrant? You don't get punished by having to have rotator cuff surgery. And when you look at all the facts, immediately when the uniform shows up, you notice how the City of Lincoln police officers, they didn't have to harm her. They handled it appropriately, which defeats the qualified immunity, because there you have City of Lincoln police officer coming down. You know, they're trying to say, judge, that this is a scary deal. City of Lincoln police walk in and boom, everything stops. Why? Because they're in uniform. So they knew that they couldn't assault her. So I think that evidence defeats any qualified immunity argument. I'll save at least a minute. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Proceed.
My name is Dave Durbin, Deputy County Attorney, Lancaster County Attorney's Office for Appley, Deputy James Rourke. To answer the question that was raised, we don't believe that qualified immunity is before this court. It was not ruled on below, so we will not be arguing qualified immunity.
Thank you.
Let me give you a hypothetical before you start.
Sure.
You're a homeowner and you're in your house and you hear a knock on the door. You open the door, you see somebody standing there in sweatshirt and jeans, and he says, I'm a deputy sheriff. I have a warrant to search your bedroom for stolen jewelry. The officer walks in and tells the homeowner to stay in the living room while he goes into the bedroom and proceeds to search the bedroom for jewels. Does the homeowner have a right to insist on some showing of authority from this person before he or she allows that person to proceed?
Well, we have two different issues.
Would a reasonable person let a stranger in their house and let them search their bedroom if they didn't show some evidence of authority?
Perhaps not, but that is why there's an affirmative defense to resisting arrest, which is not before the court today. We're here for constitutional violations related to knock and announce.
Well, is it reasonable for an officer not to show the warrant or his badge when requested to do so by the homeowner?
Well, there is a material dispute about whether the badge was displayed, but it's not the knock and announce. And badge and or warrant requirement is the knock and announce. And it's undisputed here that Deputy Rourke did knock on the door, did announce his presence and his identity as a sheriff's deputy.
But is that sufficient if he's not in uniform and doesn't show the warrant or the badge of authority? In other words, aren't we measuring what went on here as to what a reasonable officer would do under the same circumstance?
Certainly we are. And under, although it's not, it's just dicta in the case in Kentucky versus King, which is the United States Supreme Court case about exigent circumstances, The court noted in explaining why knock and announce is required that it's helpful and required not just for the citizen but for the police in order to protect them that they announce. And a specific example at the end of that opinion is that it's useful for an officer to identify himself when he's in plain clothes, and there's no requirement in that opinion that the officer have indicia of authority. Again, those are built, that is built into criminal statutes, and that could have been argued in criminal prosecution, but it was not.
Counsel, did I understand you to say that you agree there was a material a dispute in the evidence about whether the officer showed a badge when
yes.
he was asked? So you
Absolutely.
Agree that that's a dispute?
It is, but it's
is
not
it your position that it is not a material dispute?
It is not a material dispute.
Why?
Because this is the this is
because.
Oh, excuse me.
Are you asking us to follow the Eighth Circuit Moreno case?
No, I don't believe that this court has to extend its holdings beyond State versus Kelly, where you recognize exigent circumstances for cases where compliance with knock and announce would be futile and or dangerous. But we believe also...
How does your case fit in that?
Well, first, we believe the undisputed facts show that Deputy Rourke hit all the elements of knock and announce by knocking on the door, ringing the doorbell. It's undisputed that one of those two occurred, that appellant answered the door, that Deputy Rourke then announced that he was a sheriff's deputy and that he was there for Mr. Cobble, appellant's grandson. This is all that's required under the constitutional requirements that are at issue today. Secondly, even if there is a dispute about the timing of any of those announcements, as appellant has alleged, this could fall under the futility exception as the district court found it for exigent circumstances or the dangerousness exception. Once Deputy Rourke announced his office, it's undisputed that, and the district court correctly found that, the appellant attempted to bar entry. At that point, a reasonable suspicion would arise that it would be futile to continue to try to comply with knock and announce. Regardless, Deputy Rourke did announce his purpose for being there, and any timing issue should be covered by the futility exception. You asked about the Eighth Circuit case. That's a specific application of the futility exception, and we don't believe that it needs to be relied on necessarily in this case. The second exception is the dangerousness exception, and as this court recognized from the record, Mr. Cobble was known to police, and it's undisputed, and Deputy Rourke knew that he had previous weapons violations. Once he had announced his office and had been affirmatively denied entrance, it was reasonable to suspect.
Suppose this person had just finished his duties as a narcotics undercover agent and appeared at the door, scruffy, unshaven, sloppy, looking like he'd just come off of a binge, and announced that he was a deputy sheriff here to search the bedroom for stolen jewels. Does the homeowner have no recourse but to let the person in and go to the bedroom and ransack the bedroom while they stay there in the living room?
No, they may lawfully resist. And there is an affirmative defense, as appellant has noted, to resisting arrest in that case. But again, we're talking about a constitutional requirement under the Fourth Amendment for knock and announce.
Well,
that is all that has barely been alleged in this case.
Why don't you think that the showing of the warrant or the badge was material in this case?
No one has pointed to any case law requiring that this is the knock and announce and indicia of authority requirement or the knock and announce.
Yet a person, a homeowner, has an affirmative defense to the entry if there is no showing of authority?
Correct. There may not be a constitutional violation, but they cannot be charged with crime if they do not know. But again, there's a dispute about whether the badge was displayed.
Is the issue of the finding by the district court of exigent circumstances, do we review that as a matter of law, a question of law, or is it a question of fact? And what is our standard review on that?
I would believe that it's a matter of law at this point.
It has to be because it's summary judgment, doesn't it?
Correct. We're not disputing any material facts. To move on to the excessive force, appellant has raised the issue that her left shoulder was injured. And according to the testimony we just heard, that there was no crime committed, that she didn't do anything to deserve being have any force applied to her. I think what's important to remember here is that we're looking at a tense and uncertain, rapidly evolving situation. And that two of the factors when you're considering the reasonableness of force is whether the suspect is actively resisting and whether there's a threat to the officers. Now, we certainly do not contend that Mrs. Waldron presented a physical threat to those officers, but as we've already discussed, Mr. Koppel was a known dangerous suspect, and there was an arrest warrant for him. He was loose in the house, and they were in a confined space in the basement in an unfamiliar area.
Well, they weren't trying to arrest him for a violent or dangerous crime, were they? They were
not at this time.
This was a misdemeanor warrant for disturbing the peace?
This was for failure to appear for sentencing for disturbing the peace, correct. Nevertheless, it's undisputed that they knew he was potentially dangerous. He was loose in the basement. There was an unknown, unexpected third party who materialized when they reached the basement.
Well, if you knew that the suspect was potentially dangerous, wouldn't you want to do things that would ensure the cooperation of the people in the house with regard to executing your warrant?
Yes, I believe that probably is true.
Would it be unreasonable to require a deputy to say, I'm a deputy sheriff, here's the warrant, stay here, I'm going to arrest your grandson?
Well, he did say that I am a deputy sheriff.
But he provided no proof of that.
There is a dispute about that, yes.
Why do police officers carry a badge, and don't they have a certificate of authority with that badge that says they're a licensed police officer?
Yes, Your Honor.
And is the public entitled to rely upon that as evidence of their authority?
Yes, Your Honor.
So why wouldn't a reasonable person, when asked, produce their badge to establish their authority?
Yeah, there is a dispute about that.
Well, but all the inferences go to the plaintiff in this
Correct.
Case. Well, is that reasonable conduct, not to produce your badge or warrant when asked to do so?
I cannot say that it would be reasonable. I'm out of time. Are there any other questions we have to answer?
Thank you. How much time does he have for rebuttal?
He has another.
Thank you very much. The district court relied on a case out of the Northern District of Iowa, Daniel case, and it's significantly different there. In that case, Daniel was going for the officer's gun, or at least the officer thought so. Not applicable. What's great about this case, but what makes it not great, I can take that one. I have an expert witness. I mean, how often you get a case, especially police misconduct case, where you have an expert witness. Who's our expert witness? The Lincoln police officers who showed up in the basement in uniform. Boom. The incident entirely over. And that's the best part is the testimony shows, I mean, here's what he did to her, to this 77-year-old woman. He put her in handcuffs by bending her arms behind her back. Said, hey, I had surgery on my shoulder, just like the case where the Omaha Police Department lost and was affirmed because he said, hey, I had shoulder surgery. He said, tough. Well, he didn't do anything. Went ahead and did it. He cuffed her. She's so tiny, she got her hands out. He then puts his knee into her back, pulls on her arms, throws her down, and he did it again. But when the Lincoln police come, okay, what does she do? Her tiny little hand, she gets it out of the cuffs again. What do the Lincoln Police Department officers do? They act in a reasonable manner. They assess the situation, and they don't cuff her again. They say, hey, come on, we're going to have to take you down.
Well, where is the grandson when she's being handcuffed?
You know, I'm not sure. I think he's somewhere in the basement or whatever. But
And there's another deputy sheriff. Where is the deputy sheriff?
He is there as well.
Where at, though? Next to the plaintiff who's being handcuffed? Or is that other deputy sheriff trying to apprehend the grandson?
You know, Judge, unfortunately, I'm not familiar enough with the record. I'd have to guess. But my point simply is when all they had to do, the expert witness testimony is, in your opinion, sir, when you walked in showing a uniform, what happened? She cooperated fully. In your opinion, would she have cooperated had the deputy, either the deputy shown a badge? Of course she would have. Why? Because she cooperated fully with me.
That wasn't asked during the summary judgment, was it?
No, because I mean, it's not really a dispute at this point. I'm just saying that it is in evidence now when assessing it. And my time's up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next case is State versus Detterman. The Chief Justice and Miller Erman will be participating on briefs.